Our host needs no introduction.
His name is...
A name so simple it rolls right off your tongue.
His name is James... No, his name is... James Lawrence! Lawrence! Lawrence!
Try again.
Forrest Lone... Lars! Lars!
No! Chuck Jaffe.
Yes! 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 We're like this!
I'll say it again so you remember, okay? This is Money Life with Chuck Jaffe.
Wow! 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 All I can say is wow!
Please do not overdramatize these proceedings.
And now, here's Chuck.
He's one in a million.
He sure is.
Good morning and welcome to Money Life. This is Money Life for July the 21st. Thanks so much for joining me. That means we're a month into the summer. Tomorrow, of course, will be a Friday. That means it's a no-pants Friday. And that said, we're going to have some fun with that. But we've got a lot of things today before we actually have to worry about losing our pants.
Come out with your pants down!
Yeah. Because we've got a great show planned for you. So it's Thursday. And today we have a very unusual start. Because normally it's Tom Lydon. And Tom is in for the ETF of the week. But Tom is currently traveling. And in the past, when Tom has gone away, we have filled in for him with one of his colleagues, etc. But he came to me and he said, Chuck, I'd like to try something different. I work with lots of people from different fund companies. Could I name somebody the fund of the week? And you could then talk to them. Now, the reason that you don't pre-tape multiple weeks in advance, where Tom is, you know, we'd be going, okay, Tom's going to be gone for the better part of a month. Let's tape whatever. Is because there comes a point where you don't know what the market's going to do. And when you're Tom Lydon and you're talking about 200-day moving averages, we get worried that, oh, okay, there's so much you can say, hey, at press time, this happened, et cetera. But we don't want to do interviews that we worry they'd be stale or they'd be out of date. And with the market going crazy, Tom was particularly worried. So what he did was he said, look, for the next 2 weeks, what I'd like to do is basically pick an ETF of the week, but have you interview somebody from the fund company to tell people about it. So that's what we're going to do. So joining us first today is Matt Collins. He is head of U.S. product operations for ETF securities. That means you can be sure that we're going to be talking about an ETF securities ETF today. Beyond that, you'll have to listen, but it will be different because you won't have Tom there. You'll have me interviewing Matt about the fund that is the ETF of the week. That's how we're going to make this work today. Beyond that, or after that, it is our big interview today, and that means Susan Grant. She is the director of consumer protection and privacy for the Consumer Federation of America. They just did their 10 top consumer complaints. So this is not the things that people necessarily are most ripped off by or whatever, but this is the stuff that they complain about the most to the various consumer groups. So that is what we're going to be talking about. Consumers complaining, what they complain about, maybe how you can complain, and more. Then Bob Powell is back. Bob was on vacation last week and, you know, him spending some of his money. Well, we're going to talk about how you might spend your money, because I had the interviews that I did on this show with Michael Kitsis, right? Ran on the 11th of July, and I had written a column that talked about people who maybe aren't spending as much as they could. And it struck a nerve with a couple of you and some readers. And so I'm going to ask Bob, because some of you said, you know, how do I make it that after a lifetime of being frugal, I'm not just saving money for the sake of saving money when I would rather spend it? And I think Bob has some ideas, so we'll talk to him about that. Bob, of course, editor of Retirement Weekly. And then our Money Life Market Call is with Brian Andrew. He's the chief investment officer at Johnson Bank out in Wisconsin. He was formerly with Cleary Gull. Cleary Gull, an investment firm that Brian left, other things happened. Cleary Gull ultimately was purchased by Johnson Bank. But Brian talks about funds and ETFs, and so that's what we will talk about with him. Basically, in his role, he is building portfolios of funds and ETFs for his clients. We'll talk about what you can do, what he thinks you might want to be doing for you. So that's our lineup for today. It's a little different, but it should be kind of fun. And let me know what you think. I really want to tell a couple of you who have sent me notes. I've gotten some really good suggestions, particularly this week. I don't know what it is about this week, but thank you very much. I've also been swamped this week. So I have not answered pretty much any email that didn't require, you know, somebody's hair being put out because it was on fire. I haven't answered. But trust me, some of you have made an impact and some of you have raised some questions and suggestions that we have to look into from our end operationally. And that's why I say I want your participation. Literally, one of the suggestions was, could you make it that on the platforms where the podcast goes, there's a daily description of guests? And it's not something that we've ever actually explored. And it's not something that anyone had ever asked us for. But we think we can do it and it would be easy. And little things like that, that might help your experience or that you talk to when, you know, you introduce a friend to the show. We love to hear that because, hey, if we can make the show better or we can make everything around the show better, awesome. So thanks to everybody who's written. But if you haven't written and you've got something you want to say to me, questions, comments, picks for Hold It or Fold It, suggestions, and more, chuck@moneylifeshow.com. By the way, I also want to thank the person who suggested we get Bill Nygren back on the show. I don't know why he hasn't been on the show for so long. We're already on that. That should be announced for sure in the next couple of days. But we're really glad that you guys are participating. Now, Money Life is independent personal finance talk. So we think you have to participate because we're not wed to one thing. We're going to help you by exposing you to a lot of different viewpoints. But you have to decide which ones are important to you and how you feel about them. That said, do the work. Don't just go, oh, I'm just listening for buys, sells, and holds, because that's not going to help you. It really isn't. Beyond that, well, you know how to get in touch with us, I hope. It's chuck@moneylifeshow.com. Follow us on Twitter, @moneylifeshow. I'm @MKTWJaffe. Column up, by the way, in case you missed it. So there you have it. It's Money Life for July the 21st. Thanks so much for joining us. Again, our lineup, Matt Collins in place of Tom Lydon. Then Susan Grant, Bob Powell, and Brian Andrew. We'll kick things off with a unique ETF of the Week presentation when Money Life continues in just a moment.
Looking for alternative ETF strategies? Direction provides separate and distinct audiences with flexible investment tools to manage risk and execute short-term strategies. For more information, go to directionshares.com.
Well, I don't favor talking to vermin, but I'll talk to you just this once.
Exchange-traded funds are the investment world's new frontier.
You better listen.
But with so many choices and styles, the ETF world is a bit like the Wild Wild West, filled with new issues and ideas, but fraught with the same old dangers of investing.
If you're looking for trouble, I'll accommodate you.
Every Thursday, Tom Lydon of ETF Trends comes to Money Life to tell us about one ETF that is wearing the white hat right now.
Take it easy. We're the good guys.
He'll point out the good, the bad, and the ugly as he tells you which investment is worth taking a shot on.
That's good shooting.
And names his ETF of the week.
Oh, Wild West.
Well, Tom Lydon did name his ETF of the week, but this is a very unique ETF of the week segment because Tom is not actually here. Now you might go, okay, well, how did he name it and what's going to happen? Well, as he and I were discussing things, because Tom is in Europe right now, we said, well, I am perfectly capable of talking to people who put together funds, and he is always interested in exposing you to interesting funds. So we're going to talk with somebody from the fund company that runs the ETF of the week. So rather than asking Tom, I'm just going to tell you the ETF of the week is the ETFS. Physical Precious Metals Basket Shares, that's GLTR. And here to discuss that fund with me is Matt Collins, who's head of U.S. product operations for ETF Securities. That's what ETFS is in the name. By the way, For more information, go to etfsecurities.com. They're on Twitter at ETF_securities. Matt Collins, welcome to Money Life.
Chuck, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So Tom picked Glitter, GLTR, the ETF physical precious metals basket shares, a week after he had been talking about silver on the show. But he had been talking about silver because interesting play, and he'd been talking about it through junior miners. This is an interesting fund because you've got underlying metals, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and it's hold the metal in this case rather than pursuing the miners. Explain to my audience the benefits of holding the metals at a time like what we've seen right now where precious metals have been so hot.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So Glitter, GLTR, is the precious metal basket. So it's, and we discussed this with Tom, it's the only physical metal basket that's in the market right now. There are some that do it synthetically or, you know, hold maybe two of the four base metals. But this is the only one to combine everyone into one ETF. And just in the past few weeks, we've seen about double to triple the volume in this particular ETF because precious metals are in the news. They make sense for a portfolio construction standpoint. So the conversation has really picked up as of late for this particular product.
We're holding the underlying metals, but what determines the allocation to gold, palladium, platinum, and silver? I mean, as I pointed out, Tom last week was raving about silver and all the metals have been doing well. But is this some sort of a management formula? Is this an index structure? What decides how you're allocating the portfolio?
So we launched in 2010, and we've really set a fixed ratio. So it's about 60% gold, a little under 30% in silver. So it's really dominated by gold and silver, primarily because from a production standpoint, that's where a lot of the market is. But then these two other metals, platinum, palladium, you know, and for platinum, unless you've sort of ventured off the beaten path with your wedding ring choice, not many people know about platinum and palladium, and they tend to be the more progressive cyclical metals, and they're a really nice balance for some of the more defensive aspects of gold and silver. So it's a fixed ratio with you know the bulk of the assets in gold and silver right now.
You know, my mom's engagement ring was platinum, but she's always been ahead of the curve. I'm just
exactly.
saying. Now, one of the interesting things here is that because it is physical assets, the alternative for somebody would be, hey, I can go do this without an ETF, but they're going to wind up with all of the storage costs and everything else. So is this about ease? Is this about tradability? Is this about upside potential or downside risk? What's going to be the deciding factor for somebody?
For us, the absolute number one priority is transparency. You know, a lot of people, and for lack of a better word, I'll label them gold bucks that would, you know, purchase gold at home or silver and actually physically hold them. To actually do that is tough, right? It's, you know, you have to negotiate the price and, you know, go to various dealers. With physically held vaulted metals that trade in ETF format, it's trading pretty much at the spot price, the world spot price, with all sorts of market participants out there. And then you combine it in an ETF. All you have to do is pull up on the computer. You can see the price. You know the price. But I think most importantly is you know for an absolute fact that those metals are being held somewhere. And for us, when we launched that product, that's the purpose of gold and silver and some of these other metals is to know that they're there, to know that they're under lock and key. So particularly in gold, some aspect of the investment is knowing that it's there in terms of volatility or civil unrest.
Another aspect of holding gold is trying to make sure that you're not completely correlated to the market. Since this fund has been out, how has it done in terms of market correlation?
Traditional stock bond portfolio, once people start venturing outside of that, and you know, I'm sure you've talked about this all the time and you hear it from the folks you're talking to, they want income, number one, and two, they want better diversification because of what happened in 2008. So there's a few buckets. There's metals, commodities, real estate, private equity, hedge funds for the super wealthy. Metals is really the only one that shows a diversification benefit to equities. You know, the next in line tends to be commodities, things like cattle or corn or wheat, grains. They have about double, if not triple, the correlation to the S&P 500 that metals do. So from our perspective, when people are building a portfolio and they're looking for diversification, metals tends to be the one that actually does it. And I think that story is really starting to resonate with folks now.
as much as you like your own funds, it's not like this is something that you think everybody should own in massive quantities. How does somebody use this properly? Like, what kind of percentage of a portfolio do you let this get to? And is it something you rebalance regularly and hold through all things? Or is this something that, hey, if you're a gold bug, use this as a trading vehicle?
One thing I want to stress to folks out there is gold, silver, platinum, palladium, whatever it might be, don't let the headlines say that gold is just for volatility. About 50% of demand is jewelry, particularly in China and India. So as economies rebound, it's a much more balanced investment than people give it credit for. So from that perspective, it's not about betting, hey, gold's hot, silver's hot. It's really about adding this to a portfolio for the long term. And then from our perspective, we recommend anywhere from 5 to 10% of a precious metal allocations in that alternative bucket for the portfolio.
Matt, thanks so much for stepping in to join us and help us continue our ETF of the week here on Money Life.
This is great. Thanks, Chuck.
Again, folks, the ETF of the week is the ETFS for ETF Securities, the ETFS Physical Precious Metals Basket Shares. GLTR is the ticker symbol. Out from ETF Securities. For more information, ETFSecurities.com, on Twitter at ETF Securities. Now, of course, Tom Lydon couldn't be here, but if you want to learn more about ETF Trends and Tom Lydon, he's at Tom Lydon on Twitter, there at ETF Trends, and online at ETFTrends.com. Great start today to Money Life, but we just got to start. We've got lots more show to go, so settle back and relax. We're living the Money Life, and we'll be back to it in just a moment.
At Hightower, providing the best fiduciary advice to every advisory client is not just a job, it's a legal duty. Sophisticated asset management, lifetime financial planning and wealth management solutions. At Hightower, it all adds up to peace of mind. Visit HightowerAdvisors.com to learn more about the Hightower difference.
Houston, we have a problem.
What exactly is your problem?
What seems to be the problemo here?
I'm sorry, but I am angry!
Well, yeah. People have a lot to be angry about when they have problems, and we're going to be talking right now with Susan Grant from the Consumer Federation of America, which recently released its list of the top consumer complaints for 2015. Susan Grant is the Director of Consumer Protection and Privacy for the Consumer Federation of America. If you want more information, go to consumerfed.org. They're on Twitter at consumerfed. And if you want to see the list and the entire report on the top 10 consumer complaints, go to the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. Find Susan there, and you'll find the link that you are looking for. Susan Grant, welcome back to Money Life.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to chat with you. And, you know, truthfully, it's not necessarily that the list changes a lot from year to year. It's kind of like in any given year, it's what winds up being popular, topical, and what are people who are just trying to annoy us doing, right?
That's right. So if you look at the top 10 complaints, auto and home improvement are always number one or number two. And that's the case this year with auto sales, repairs, rentals, and towing being number one, and home improvement and construction being number two.
And it really also shouldn't be a surprise, because those are also the places where people have, you know, the biggest financial stake, right? Your home and your car are the biggest purchases you make in a lifetime. Therefore, you know, the amounts of money you're spending, whether it's on repairs or what have you, winds up being the biggest. So it's not necessarily that those industries are dramatically more crooked or problematic, is it?
No, it's that if something goes wrong with an auto purchase or having your car repaired or home improvement or construction, as you say, you've got a big investment. And also it can really inconvenience you. So you're more likely to complain about those problems than, for instance, if your toaster burns out.
Yeah. So auto and home improvement, and construction, those were the two big ones. And as you point out, they're sort of always the big ones. What was next?
At number three is utilities, which includes phone, cable, satellite, internet, electric, and gas service. That actually jumped up. Credit and debt had been number three previously. But I wouldn't read too much into that. They're awful close. I think part of the reason why utilities has jumped is that a lot of people have cell phones these days, and they have issues with cell phone billing. Also, there are now competitive services for electricity and gas. And there are some misleading and aggressive sales tactics going on. So I think that some of the complaints probably stem from that.
Yeah, well, of course, we wind up in a situation where people are always getting into things wondering,
what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? Then they find out. The other side of this is, whatever it is, you kind of need to know how to complain. I mean, if you're tracking the complaints, that means people did it the right way, doesn't it?
Well, there are lots of different places to complain. Every year we survey state and local government consumer protection agencies. It could be your state attorney general's office or a state department of consumer affairs, a county office, and in some places there are even city offices such as the New York City Department of Consumer Affairs. So those are the places that I think consumers naturally look to first. It might be that in contacting them, you could be referred somewhere else if your complaint would be more appropriate going to another agency. But I think that's a good place to start, not only to complain, but to ask questions before you make a major purchase, such as an auto purchase or home improvement or construction. So much depends on the reputation of the person that you're dealing with. And with things like home improvement and construction, there may be licenses or registration or something else that the contractor has to comply with. And you want to make sure that the person that you're thinking about doing business with has complied, though obviously that's no guarantee that you're not going to run into a problem. At least if you have a problem, you may have a better chance of doing something about it.
Well, and we talked about, okay, so auto and home improvement, home-related things, one and two. Utilities this year became three. It overtook credit and debt issues, which are billing and fee disputes and mortgage-related things and credit repair and debt relief scams. And there's some really abusive and nasty things in that credit and debt category. But I'm curious, as we're talking about the order staying roughly the same, is the overall number of complaints on the rise or on the decline?
In some places, consumer agencies are getting more complaints. In some places, at least the agencies that participated in our survey, some of them got fewer complaints last year. I think that's because of many different factors. Part of it is how good a job they do getting the word out there that they are a resource for people. Certainly, if they've brought a big case where they get a lot of publicity, that can mean that you get a lot more complaints just because people know that you're there to help them.
So we talked about the top couple. Next on the list, I believe, is retail sales, right?
That's right. And that could be problems with non-delivery or defective merchandise or a problem with a rebate or false advertising. There's a lot of different kinds of problems that go in that general category. After which comes services. So in our complaint report, we've got some examples of those. A wedding photographer that never gave people their wedding photographs, a very emotional problem as well as involving money. Another emotional problem, people who ordered gravestones for the resting places of their loved ones and never received them. But it could also be, let me think of another one. Consumers went into a tattoo parlor in Florida somewhere and never really asked how much it would cost and were shocked when the two of them were presented with a bill at the end for $700 some odd. There's lots of different things that can be in the services category.
Wow, that's not a temporary mistake. That is a permanent mistake. Oh, that'd be bad.
It's wrong, shockingly wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Landlord and tenant disputes, they're always on the list. I'm a little surprised they seem to have fallen down. They're down in the bottom half of the top 10 now.
That's true, but that's a perennial problem. And we've got some hair-raising examples in the report. A person who the first night that she was in her new apartment woke up with roaches crawling all over her. Another person who was threatened with eviction because she had a grill on her balcony without realizing that that was forbidden. So the landlord-tenant issues range from sort of health and safety to disputes over what happens if you decide you need to break your lease and leave early, or other kinds of disputes that can come up.
Well, the other side of this is, I mean, and we'll quickly just sort of say, the eighth most popular was household goods, then health products and services, then it was internet sales and outright fraud, you know, where you had bogus lotteries and work-at-home schemes and fake check scams and things like that. When fraud is actually tied for 10th, that's probably a good sign, right?
I guess that is a good sign. But as I say, the rankings are really close. So very often in the top 10, we have home solicitations, which are solicitations by telephone, mail, or email.
Yep.
And that would have been number 11 if we had gone that far. It was right up with internet sales and fraud. So that doesn't mean that there are fewer complaints about, for instance, unwanted telemarketing. It just got edged out.
Well, hopefully we can get all of these things. And I have to say, folks, if these things, like, you can read some of these stories and they set off, you know, it's immediately in your head, you're doing it. Your reaction, if they were to happen to you, is obvious. Exactly. That kind of frustration. But if you read the report, well, A, you're going to find some things where you just can't believe some of the stuff that's out there. And then you'll also learn a lot better about how you should complain. And folks, you definitely want to stand up for your rights. And whether it's in these things or anything else, the Consumer Federation of America does a great job on it. You can learn more at consumerfed.org. They're at Consumer Fed on Twitter. Susan Grant, thanks so much for joining me on Money Life to discuss this.
Thanks for having me, and I hope people will read the tips so they'll know how to avoid these problems and what to do if they have them.
Absolutely. And again, you can find that at consumerfed.org. It's all linked up at the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. And when you find that report, yeah, you will read it and you'll sort of mix laughing with...
You have made me very angry.
Yeah, exactly.
Very angry indeed.
Exactly. Hopefully Money Life doesn't make you angry because we got half a show to go. So settle back and relax and don't touch that dial. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Customize an investment portfolio with FlexShares, ETFs designed to pursue targeted goals and to adapt to changing market conditions with both equity and fixed income solutions. For more information, go to FlexShares.com.
Your retirement years are coming. Are you financially ready for your retirement?
You know, I've been thinking.
Oh, that would explain the beads of sweat.
Don't let this happen to you.
I'm afraid it's just not sufficient to refinance your home.
Where shall I go? What shall I do?
My advice to you is to start drinking heavily.
Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something is happening.
Bob Powell knows where to turn and how to help you with your financial needs as you plan for or live in retirement.
Here I come to save the day.
It's all here as Retirement Weekly's Bob Powell joins Money Life every week for Senior Focus.
Senior citizens, although slow and dangerous behind the wheel, can still serve a purpose.
Indeed they can, and they'll serve it a lot better if they understand what they need to do with and about their money in retirement. And if you want help figuring that out for yourself, well, then you should turn to the work of Bob Powell, my guest. He is the editor of Retirement Weekly. He is a columnist in the Retire Mentors section at MarketWatch, same place where you find my work. And, of course, he's a regular on this show. Now, if you want more information, find Bob's columns at MarketWatch, because Retirement Weekly is also a MarketWatch product, and when you find his columns, you'll find links to Retirement Weekly. If you want help finding his columns, follow Bob on Twitter, where he's at RJPIII. But right now, he's back with us from a week off of vacation. Bob Powell, welcome back to Money Life.
Chuck, thanks for having me on.
You are feeling rested. You are not retired, but you had no problem spending your money on vacation. And that actually brings me to where I want to go with you this week. Because while you were away, I had Michael Kitsis on the show from Pinnacle Advisory Services. He runs the Nerd's Eye View blog for my audience members who don't remember. And we were talking, and I wound up writing about how a lot of people, they're building their portfolios around the 4% rule. You can spend 4% each year, you know, and then adjust it for inflation over time, and you won't run out of money. And he's saying people are not adequately spending things down. So I write this column that says, look, a 6% rate of spending is a little bit more normal for a lot of people, et cetera. Get lots of hate mail, but I also get a lot of people saying, hey, you just described me. A couple of folks who are regular audience members who write me on the show were talking about it. And I got one, for example, from a guy named Mike who says, Chuck, I'm a retired journalist. I much appreciated your column on saving too much. I've seen it with my mother, who's probably sitting on 3 times the amount she earned in her lifetime, and now I'm on track to repeat her stupid frugality. If you have some ideas on how to change the mindset, I'd love to hear them. So, Bob, how do you get somebody who spent a lifetime doing all the right things that you prescribe, that I prescribe, that everyone seems to prescribe, and then they get there and they can't get out of that mode to actually enjoy things?
Yeah. So I think there's a great deal of fear about the unknown of how long you're going to live, or what healthcare shock awaits you, or what divorce awaits you, or what, you might have a special needs child, and what kind of cost might be associated with that. So there's this tendency, I think, on the part of people to hoard their money so that they have something just in case, right? And that just in case could be anything, right? Your son gets divorced and you need some help paying for the lawyers, or you need assisted living or nursing home or skilled care or home health aides or whatever it might be. So you don't know what's ahead, so you hoard the money. You live more frugally today than you might need to. And I think I've talked to planners about this in the past, Chuck, and a couple of things that come to mind in terms of concrete advice, one of which is you probably need to go talk to a planner and have them analyze your assets and have them go down the checklist. You've got this risk managed. You've got this money set aside for long-term care. You've got this amount of money set aside for a new roof on your house, or whatever the money, you know, whatever it is that you need to allocate your money for. At that point, which you can say, you know, I've set aside, I've earmarked enough money for all these what ifs, all the just-in-case stuff. And that leaves me with this pot of money spent. And at that point, what planners sometimes say is that what people want are the permission to spend that money. And so oftentimes, if you go to a financial advisor and the result is he gives you permission to spend more or draw down more money because you've covered the risk that you're afraid of, well, then you might be more inclined to spend the money down, right?
Well, and it's interesting to me because, for example, Rich in Orchard Beach, Maryland, who my audience knows because he does a lot of hold it or fold it requests, was talking about this. Now, Rich doesn't have children and he's recently retired, and the long-term care part is definitely one of his worries. And you can see somebody who's been frugal, who thinks about it, goes, I don't really need, like, I have enough assets to insure myself, you know, in all but the worst case scenario. You can see that person not wanting to buy long-term care insurance. But what you're really saying is like, hey, if you take care of it, if you go, I may not want it, but the fact that I buy the long-term care coverage actually gives me the permission to then go out and be more aggressive in my spending, sort of let me use my gold in the golden years, right?
Yeah, I think that's, and the analogy is simple, right? I just came back from vacation. I saved enough money to pay for the expenses on vacation. I gave myself permission to pay for that. I didn't give myself permission to pay for more than what I was expecting to pay unless I had it in my mind that that was part of the budget. So I didn't, you know, I wasn't spending frugally on my vacation per se. I was spending exactly what I had planned to spend, given given myself permission, and had saved enough to cover those expenses. I think maybe people need to do that. Now, obviously, vacation's a lot different from retirement. It's 1 or 2 weeks or whatever the case may be, and retirement's 30 years. And granted, that, you know, I will never dismiss anyone's fear about the unknown and the desire to make sure they have enough money to pay for the just-in-case, what-if situation. But a lot of it goes away if you take the time to put pencil to paper and say, check, I got that one, check, we got this one, check, we got that one. Then at least it gives you sense. Now, the other thing I'll mention, Chuck, and I think it's really important, is in a world where 4% is the rule of thumb, we get wrapped up in this notion that this rule of thumb is a one-size-fits-all. And it may be the case that someone who has a lot of assets and also has a very decent pension that covers their essential and maybe even their discretionary expenses may not need to draw down any money from their portfolio, their 401k or IRA. On the other hand, someone who doesn't have a defined benefit plan and only has an IRA will have to draw down those assets. They may have to draw it down in such a way that it lasts 30 years. And so maybe 4% isn't right for them, but 2% is.
Or, right.
And then in the case of the person who might be, quote unquote, overfunded, you know, 6% withdrawal right may be right for them, and they'll never have to worry about outliving their assets.
The moral of the story is put the pencil to paper, and if the numbers are working in your favor, give yourself the permission to spend. Like, make it your job, sort of say, to plan to get the experiences that you always wanted. I mean,
you
there's
save
no...
that money, right?
Yeah.
You save that money to enjoy your standard of living that you wanted.
No sense in being the wealthiest person in the cemetery.
Or having your kids enjoy the fruits of your labor that you didn't intend for them to enjoy.
Yeah, there you go. Bob, great stuff as always. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next
Thank
week.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks ever so much, Chuck.
Bob Powell, editor of Retirement Weekly, columnist in the Retire Mentor section at MarketWatch. Find his work there and you'll find links to help find his work there. Follow him on Twitter. He's at RJPIII. Up next, it's the Money Life Market Call. You know it and you love it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Independent and advisor-owned, Hightower ensures that best-in-class financial product and service providers compete for your business every day, a groundbreaking model that's making waves on Wall Street. Discover what Hightower can do for you at HightowerAdvisors.com.
It's hard to know what to do next in the stock market.
Where am I? What am I doing here?
That's because one expert's rally is another's prelude to a correction.
Of course, people do go both ways.
One manager's buy is another man's sell.
Have you come to any conclusions yet?
Each day, the Money Life Market Call brings you a different expert's take on where to invest and what to avoid.
Now listen, Grapehead, I'll explain it so even you can understand it.
Just as important, you'll find out the reasons behind that thinking, and that should make your next financial decisions easier and smarter.
We do have a system, and it works.
It's the Money Life Market Call. Now.
The only reason we're here is to make catty observations and rude remarks. And that was nothing good on TV.
Well, there's very little that's ever going to be good on TV when it comes to talking about investing and helping you figure out what you need to do and how you might think about the market because, well, truthfully, they don't take the time. We do, and today we're taking that time with Brian Andrew. He's the Chief Investment Officer at Johnson Bank. If you hear more from Brian and you want to get more information, it's very simple. It's johnsonbank.com and on Twitter at Johnson Bank. We're going to be talking mutual funds and exchange traded funds with Brian. And I'm very pleased to say, Brian Andrew, welcome back to Money Life.
Chuck, thank you for having me.
So we always start with methodology because as much as everybody loves to hear what they might want to be buying and selling, where that stuff comes from is really important. So explain to us what it is that goes into you deciding these are the funds and ETFs that I want to buy and these are the ones I want to avoid.
Sure. Just to take you through our process. So we really focus on three things at Johnson Bank when we're building portfolios for clients, and that's asset allocation. So how do we allocate money across asset classes, capital allocation, how do we allocate money within asset classes, and manager selection, and that's really the thing that you're focused on. And we have a group of people who perform money manager research and due diligence, which to us means looking at how managers develop their strategies and implement those strategies over time, as well as the outcomes that they're able to achieve. We probably conduct over 1,000 meetings a year with money managers to make sure those that we hire on behalf of our clients are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And we try to identify those strategies that have had success over real long periods of time.
How much does the macro picture fit in? Because when you're doing the basics to find the kind of funds that you're talking about, you don't necessarily have to worry too much about the day-to-day headlines. And at the same time, you're dealing with clients who have that mix. They have the help me build a portfolio for a lifetime, and oh my goodness, what do I do now?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's really the idea behind separating the asset allocation decisions from the capital allocation decisions. What I mean by that is, you know, every client has a long-term objective, and their strategy in terms of how much money they have in stocks or bonds or international stocks or global bonds is a function of that strategy. But as we know, the value between those different markets changes from month to month, quarter to quarter, year to year. And what we're doing is trying to identify those value differences and add capital at times that are advantageous for clients relative to what their strategy is. And that's where that manager selection process comes in, which is to try to identify the right type of manager style at a particular time in the market based on where relative value is.
So as you look through the process right now, what stands out to you? What are issues and areas that you're saying, here's the stuff that we want to be looking at for our clients?
One of the most important things that we're looking at right now is the trade-off between return and risk in the stock and bond markets. So what I mean by that is if you look at where we are on a year-to-date basis, I think most people would be surprised to learn that intermediate bonds have actually produced a slightly better return than stocks. So intermediate bonds are up over 6%. Stocks are up just about 6% on a year-to-date basis. And I think as a result, if we think about the risk-reward trade-off in bonds versus stocks, bonds actually look more attractive today, given the global macro environment that we have, than stocks do. So that'd be an example of how we use that macro picture to think about allocating capital.
Okay. So within that space, what would be the kind of funds you'd be telling somebody to look at? And is your preference going to be funds, ETFs, or are you agnostic? I want the right construction to do what I want as opposed to the vehicle per se.
Yeah, let me address the fund versus ETF question first and then give you some specific ideas. I think the way we look at funds versus ETFs, or another way to say that is active management versus passive management or index management, is a function of how big the opportunity is in a particular part of the market. So the larger the valuation difference between current value and fair value on the up or down side, the more likely you are to choose active versus passive. So as an example, if high yield bonds coming out of the 2008-09 recession are trading at all-time high yields, you don't need to hire an active manager to make money in high yield bonds. You know, with that level now being less than 50% of what it was back in 2009, it probably makes more sense to hire somebody who can actually select credit on your behalf. So I think we'd be agnostic, but we have a process of identifying whether we like active versus passive management at a point in time.
Okay, so now let's go to a couple of funds that perhaps fit the bill for you right now.
Sure. So sticking with my theme, thinking that there continues to be a better risk-reward trade-off in the bond market, the BlackRock Total Return Fund would be an example of a fund that we like in terms of a fund that has really the kind of duration that I think you want or the kind of average maturity you want in this market environment. So that's in the 5 to 6 year range. It tends to have an emphasis on credit, corporate bonds as an example versus treasuries. And I think as a result of their ability to manage risk, that type of a fund can produce a good return given the amount of risk that you're taking. So that would be an example of something that I'd focus on the bond side of the equation if I was willing to take that average maturity risk.
Okay. So, and BlackRock Total Return, the A shares for my audience, if they want to look it up, that would be ticker symbol MDHQX. What else stands out to you right now?
I think another part of the market, just to switch gears, even though I said what I said about equities in terms of where we are from a valuation perspective, one of the parts of the domestic equity market that I think we like a lot is the mid-cap part of the market for a couple of reasons. And that is that mid-caps in general are trading at a slightly lower valuation than the large-cap part of the market, so it makes them a little bit more attractive from a valuation perspective. They've done well on a year-to-date basis, but still, if you look at their longer-term performance, they've underperformed the large-cap part of the market, so there's some room to move. And I think the other thing that's important is that with the large and mega-cap part of the U.S. market, you end up with a lot of multinational companies who may continue to see some drag from the stronger dollar that we're starting to see again. That might be a headwind for them. And on the small-cap side, as you go through these shocks in the market like we had some time ago with the Brexit vote, small cap tends to be a lot more volatile. So as a result, the mid cap part of the market looks attractive to us. The principal mid cap fund would be an example of the kind of fund that we would like in this environment with a little bit of a value to core leaning as opposed to a growth leaning.
Okay, so that gives us an idea. Principal mid-cap is PEMGX on the A shares. What's the sell discipline? Because you talk about buying great funds and the reason that you want to hold them, but it's equally important for folks to have a sell discipline.
Right, I think there's two parts to our sell discipline. So going back to the idea that one of our main focuses is on manager selection, and there's two parts to that. There's the quantitative part, which is just looking at the numbers, understanding how a money manager gets the returns they get from a quantitative perspective and how they identify their valuation criteria and that kind of thing. But there's also the qualitative part, which is to actually talk to the money managers that we use on behalf of our clients and understand how their organization works, how their compensation structure works, how analysts and managers work together to build a portfolio. And oftentimes it's that qualitative work that we do that leads us to sell a manager because we discover that they're either departing from their normal strategy because they've had a performance issue, or there's turnover from a portfolio manager, or sometimes even from a research perspective that gives us concern that there may be performance problems down the road even though they haven't manifested themselves yet.
Well, very interesting stuff. Now we're going to have you tested by our audience because we're going to see how you feel about some funds and ETFs that they are particularly interested in.
Play, hold it.
You got to know when to hold up.
Or fold it.
Know when to fold up.
It's hold it or fold it time with Brian Andrew, the Chief Investment Officer at Johnson Bank. JohnsonBank.com, at Johnson Bank on Twitter. That's how you get more information about Brian and the firm. Now, Hold It or Fold It is where we put our guest to your test. And if you want to participate directly, send us your name, your hometown, and the ticker symbols you're interested in. Funds, ETFs, closed-end funds, stocks, of course, whatever you got, send it to Chuck at MoneyLifeShow.com. Somebody who did just that, Craig in Belleville, Texas. He wants to know about the Voya Global Real Estate Fund. That's IGLAX.
The Voya Global Real Estate Fund is a fund that we like for a number of reasons. One, I think it has a good balance of real estate investment trusts on a global basis. It's about 55% invested in the U.S., about 20% in Europe, and the rest in Asia and Australia. So from a asset mix perspective, on a global basis, it makes a lot of sense. You have to be a long-term investor. REITs have done very well, particularly in the last several months, as people have continued to look for yield. The fund has now about a 2.3% yield. But in general, I think because it's global in orientation and not just U.S., there are parts of the world that are still pretty attractive from a real estate perspective. So this is a fund that is beginning to look a little bit expensive, but in general, on a long-term basis for a REIT investor, this is a great place to be.
What is this obsession with real estate?
Well, the obsession with real estate is good funds that capture the dividend, etc. That was a buy on Voya Global Real Estate, IGLAX. Now, along with real estate funds, another area that my audience is very interested in is Master Limited Partnerships. Dale in London, Ohio wants to know about the Global X MLP ETF. That's MLPA.
This is a fund, I think in general, I'd look for a different way to play the MLP market, number one, in terms of having someone who's more focused on active management and identifying the best opportunities in the market. But more importantly, I think MLPs in general, going back to what I said earlier about real estate, people have also come back to the MLP market because yields are very high. This fund, as an example, has a yield that's almost 7.7%. And I think what's happened is MLPs got expensive for two reasons. One, people are looking for yield, and also we had a pretty decent rally in oil, maybe further than it should have gone. And as a result, we've started to see a trade-off, and that may be a negative for this market. So on a near-term basis, I think we're less excited about MLPs than we are real estate.
That's a fold on the Global X MLP ETF, MLPA.
Sell, yes, precisely, yes.
John in Natick, Massachusetts wants to know about Oakmark International One. That is OAKIX.
We like the international market, in particular on a valuation basis, but this is a fund that has a manager who's been in place since 1992 and is a great contrarian. I think, as most people are familiar with the fund know, the fund has done poorly this year because of that contrarian view, and in particular was really hurt by the turmoil in the market that arose from Brexit. About 32% of this fund is in financial services. European banks in particular have been struggling based on the current environment of low to negative interest rates and a flat yield curve and low loan demand. That's a pretty tough combination for European banks. It's about 20% cyclicals, and the combination of that has really hurt the performance of the fund. However, for a very long-term investor, if you like to buy things when they're extremely out of favor, that defines this portfolio of stocks. And as I said, this manager over very long periods of time has done a great job in terms of managing with that contrarian style. So I would say near term, don't expect much, but if you're someone with a very long time horizon, we like the manager and the fund a lot.
Buyer beware, dude.
Sort of a cautious buy on Oakmark International One, OAKIX. Peter in Boca Raton, Florida wants to know about Fidelity Ginny Mae. That's FGMNX.
This is a fund on the bond side that we like for two reasons. One, I think the bond market in general looks expensive. If you look at it sector by sector, whether you're looking at corporate bonds or high yield to a lesser extent or asset backs and mortgages, but the mortgage area is probably the least expensive. So for someone who is a little more risk averse, wants a little bit better yield, because the housing market is probably one of the bright spots in the U.S. economy, I think a mortgage fund like this will continue to do well and produce a little bit better yield than what people could expect out of a fund that might have more corporate exposure and has this fund has a lot less credit risk. So it's got about a 2.8% yield with an average maturity that's under three. So I think that makes this a pretty attractive fund.
Would you mind stepping aside? I've got a purchase to make.
That's a buy on Fidelity Ginny Mae, FGMNX. And last, a softball from Mark in Mitchell, South Dakota. You said you liked mid-caps. He wants to know about MDY, the Spider S&P Mid-Cap 400 ETF.
So I said earlier that we like mid-cap stocks, and I like this Spider as a way to play the mid-cap part of the market if you're not interested in using active management or if you tend to be an index kind of buyer. This is a great way to play the mid-cap part of the market. Going back to what I said earlier about the opportunity in the market today, I think we're probably in an environment where active management can do a little bit better than passive going forward. So if I had a choice between the two, I'd probably pick an active mid-cap fund. But like I said, if you're an index buyer, I think this is a great way to play that part of the market.
So if you want the mid-cap revolution,
he either gets on board or he gets left behind.
You have your choice. Again, we had an active fund earlier, but you just heard good news if you want to go the passive route with the Spider S&P Mid-Cap 400, the MDY. Brian, I'm afraid we've come to the end of our time, but this was great. I hope we get a chance to chat with you again in the not-too-distant future.
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
Brian Andrew is the Chief Investment Officer at Johnson Bank. If you want more information, just like it sounds, it's johnsonbank.com, on Twitter at Johnson Bank. All right, we are just about done with today's show, but just about means not quite. So we'll wrap things up, get you set for the rest of the week when we finish things up right after this message.
PowerShares provides a different take on traditional asset categories while providing advisors and investors with innovative investment opportunities. For more information, go to PowerShares.com. Invesco Distributors, Incorporated.
That was fun talking with Brian Andrew. Now, tomorrow on this show, no market call. I know you hate it when that happens, but we have two really good, well, I won't even call them two big interviews, because we stopped calling our times with authors big interviews. We call them book interviews. So we have a book interview tomorrow. That's the interview with George Lakey, author of Viking Economics. And then Kevin Mann from Hennion and Walsh will be here. And I just heard, like, I was out today driving around or something this morning, and I heard, like, an ad on the radio for Hennion & Walsh selling muni bonds. Now, that's not entirely what they specialize in, but I always like having Kevin on the show. He does a great job of sort of sizing up what's going on, and I may ask him about that commercial if I remember to do that. So that's tomorrow. Also on tomorrow's show, Leo Lydon. If you've listened to the show for a long time, you know Leo's come on for technical difficulties for ages. He's always one of my more interesting guests, and he hasn't been on the show for a while. And I know he's actually very nervous about the market at new highs, even though he's been optimistic in saying we would get to new highs. He's actually very nervous about it being there right now. So he'll be on the show tomorrow. Also, Greg McBride from Bankrate.com. It's going to be a good day. You should plan to be here. Of course, we say that each and every day. You should plan to be here each and every day. Yeah, you should. That's part of living the money life. Again, I want to thank the folks who dropped me some suggestions, but we love hearing from everybody. So, again, I apologize for not getting responses to everybody. I have been swamped, but if you have ideas for the show and more, it's a great time to send them. We're working on a bunch of things for the show. So, checking our processes. It could be little things. You know, the one I noted was that it was suggested, hey, you know, give more of an explainer on the podcast formats. We're going to see whether or not we can do that. So it can be little things, big things, questions, comments, and more. Chuck at moneylifeshow.com. Don't be shy. I want to thank my guests from today. Again, Matt Collins stepping in for Tom Lydon, Susan Grant, Bob Powell, and Brian Andrew. I want to thank Rob Floyd, my producer. And again, I want to thank all of you guys for being here. Really, I appreciate the time you take to spend with me each and every day. Today's Money Life quote of the day comes from Steve Martin. Yes, that Steve Martin, who said, "I believe that sex is one of the most beautiful, natural, wholesome things that money can buy." Yeah, no comment, folks. The only thing I'll leave you with is a reminder that, hey, until we do this again the next time, please remember that the best thing you can do for your money is not worry too much about it. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
The opinions expressed on Money Life are those of the host and guests only and reflect their personal thinking. They are not to be taken as representative policy or strategy of the organization that the host or guest represents. This show is a production of Money Life Radio, Inc., which retains all rights to its content. This broadcast, either in part or in its entirety, may not be retransmitted, reproduced, or rebroadcast without the express consent of Money Life Radio, Inc. This show is an informational service only. The information here is not to be considered a direct and personal recommendation for any individual to make a specific financial decision or transaction, but rather is meant as an informal resource to help investors make informed decisions. Always consult your financial advisor, accountant, or attorney before making any major financial decision. The information provided has been obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed for either its accuracy or completeness.
It's been nice talking with you, Chuck.